The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. So the Texans play the Cowboys on Monday night. They are catching a Cowboys team that is in turmoil. If you were looking at the schedule at the beginning of the season, I think this is one of the games. I think it's why it's on Monday Night Football. This is a game that I think a lot of folks thought would be a battle between two teams leading their division. The Texans are holding up their end of the bargain from that standpoint. They're 6-4. They lead the AFC South. Third straight primetime game, so hopefully this turns out better than the previous two. The Cowboys are just a hot mess, and they're a hot injured mess, too. Like, it's not even like they're 3-6, they're dysfunctional, but hey, we get to watch Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. Like, it's no, you're getting Cooper Rush, maybe, for the whole game. They got to Trey Lance eventually on Sunday against the Eagles.
Yeah, so it's just an absolute disaster right now.
Which
and
is
then,
cool for me.
And obviously, there's a lot of scrutiny about Mike McCarthy and what his job is. Is Jerry Jones going to pull the trigger and fire him? And if so, who's the next coach?
Yeah. I wonder what it would take. Like, how bad would it have to get on Monday night for Jerry to just finally, like, say, nope, you know, it's time to move on? Like, or is Jerry, do you think Jerry just...
Oh, that's true. I wonder, there is a part of him that I do, you know, he's
like, if they just quit. If they just quit.
Yeah, you know? And it's versus Houston.
Yes.
Like, and not just the Texans, but versus Houston.
Right.
That I think there is a natural rivalry there that he looks at in terms of just, hey, I'm the alpha here. All right, let's not forget
it. In this state, yeah.
It's not like he's overly concerned about it or anything. This isn't like, you know, Houston guy trying to act like, no, but I think there is that. And, you know, I know when they lost, like he's talked about how devastating it was to him to lose when they lost in the first game ever,
yeah.
the expansion game.
Yeah, yeah.
That might really twist the knife in his ribs.
Yeah. I'd love
let's
to see it.
Let's do it, Houston.
Come
let's,
on.
Let's inject some turmoil
yeah,
into
Texans,
Dallas.
Yeah, Texans, none of this one score stuff, man. Let's go kick these guys' ass. Here's Rex Ryan yesterday on ESPN. Talking about a potential head coaching solution if the Cowboys do move on from Mike McCarthy.
In my opinion, like, how are you going to fix it? Well, I look at a couple of teams recently. All right. I look at the Lions, who they hire. One of their former players,
right? Mm-hmm.
Dan Campbell.
Yeah.
Okay. How about the Houston Texans?
Former player.
Right down the road. Former player, one of their former players.
DeMeco Ryans.
DeMeco Ryans. All right. I can see Aaron Glenn going to New Orleans next year. Mm-hmm. All right. Or the Jets, you know, a former player. All right, Deion Sanders may be in play here.
Okay, so that's Dan. We'll get to the case for Deion in a second. The reason I'm laughing, Seth, the TV right here in studio as he's listing all these names and the success and the suggesting guys. Jeff Saturday is on the screen in here. I'm like,
ooh.
The Colts hired a former player last year. His name was Jeff Saturday. That did not work out very well.
Well, but I mean, but that was just on the fly, and he hadn't, you know, he hadn't gotten that valuable head coaching experience that he now has.
No guarantee. Now, yeah. Okay, like, if you're going to stick up for Jeff Saturday, then we're just going to end the show right here.
That'll be his big resume item. Like, hey, you know, I have been a head coach before. Let me tell you the story.
You're taking up for Jeff Saturday. So what do you think of the comps there? We'll get to the case for Deion in a second, but Aaron Glenn to either of those teams sounds interesting, but what do you make of the whole former player thing that Rex is talking about?
I think that it definitely, I would lean into it hard if I were a player. If A, that's where I really wanted to be. And like with D'Amico, it was just such a natural fit. Dan Campbell played for 3 years, his last 3 years of his career with Detroit. And
okay.
He didn't play that much in his last couple years, but he was in the organization.
He was in the building, yeah.
For
yeah.
a while, yeah. So they had a familiarity with him. I think that part of it too. I think the owners, like a guy like Aaron Glenn, if the Texans had wanted to interview Aaron Glenn, like they know who he is as a person. Mm-hmm. He was the consummate professional and good leader and all of that. So the McNair family knows him a little bit. So I think likewise, you know, Detroit with Dan Campbell, there's a certain degree of familiarity there. With Aaron, with the Jets especially, that's where he spent the most time. And I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah. And Deion, I think, you know, Deion played for a handful of teams. He is clearly, to me, most associated with being a Dallas Cowboy.
The only thing about Aaron to the Jets would be that, because he only spent one season his last year of his career with New Orleans. The only thing about with the Jets is that they're coming off of a defensive-minded head coach that couldn't fix or wasn't allowed to choose his quarterback, whatever it might have been. So that they might shy away from,
maybe.
Especially, like, Robert Saleh is not a former player, but, like, you wouldn't guess it from his enthusiasm. He coaches the same way D'Amico does and everything.
Well, the first thing I'd ask if I'm Aaron Glenn is Aaron Rodgers back next year? And I don't know what the right answer would be for me if I were Aaron Glenn, yes or no. I think that job is more enticing with no Aaron Rodgers than with Aaron Rodgers.
I was, before we get to Deion, I was listening to Jake Asman's podcast yesterday, or he was live streaming on Twitter, and it's a Jets live stream. So he had a guy who's like a film watching guru on with him, and it was interesting because, you know, and he was also a Jets fan. And he's saying, well, you know, you can talk all you want about what they could do to fix the offense or improve the offense and help Aaron out. This is the offense that Aaron wants.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they didn't have an adequate offensive coordinator there because that was the offensive coordinator that Aaron wanted. So a lot of the complaints about how the offense they're running up there is just kind of an old school West Coast offense without a lot of pre-snap motion, and there's the communication between all this stuff that people are pointing to as the problem of the Jets offense, that's of Aaron Rodgers' own doing. So yeah, if I'm Aaron Glenn, no, there's only room enough for two Aarons on this team.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah. Here is Rex Ryan making the case for Deion Sanders to Dallas.
They need to have somebody that has the pride in that damn organization. Being a Dallas Cowboy, the pride you take in it. And by the way, Deion, everywhere he's been, has been kicking you know what.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jackson State, they were unbelievable when he was there. He takes Colorado. Right now they're 7-2. Nobody saw that coming. They're playing in the big, you know, whatever, the damn
Big, Big 12,
now.
Yeah.
Big 12. Like, I'm just saying, that because I already know Mike McCarthy's a good football coach, and he's going to be out the door. There's no doubt about it. That whole, the whole thing's going to be blown up. But watch what happens. They need that. How are you going to get this kid back on board? He's going to have to damn respect that guy that comes in that building. You're not going to respect Deion Sanders? He's twice the player you are. All right? And you know what? I coach Deion Sanders. Great teammate.
All right, so Rex, I think he's talking about in Baltimore. Rex was on the defensive staff there towards the end of Deion's career.
Yeah.
Deion was a Raven. The kid he's referring to there is Micah Parsons, because Micah Parsons he's been a big character in this Mike McCarthy drama that's been going on right now.
Yeah, well, and I think this is the question. I personally think that Deion Sanders might be the guy who's best suited. It's aside from, like, without all the discussion about actual coaching stuff, he might be the guy who's best suited to work in that environment where the owner himself is bringing so much extra attention and controversy and everything all the time that various former players and coaches will talk about. You know, Michael Irvin has never shied away from saying this. It's hard to coach and instill a certain culture when you're in that environment. But I think Deion is a guy who's suited to, I think, both be... He's shown that he's got a capacity for all the drama and everything. And I think even when he's, you know, going off in press conferences, it's not like he knows what he's doing, you sure. know, when he does all that, while still coaching good football.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because of all of that, I think that Jerry Jones would be too afraid of him. He doesn't want anybody that's going to shine as bright as he does. And he doesn't want, it's okay from the players, but not the coaches. He didn't like Jimmy Johnson, being the genie, like you just couldn't handle it. So yeah. I don't know if Jerry Jones has the gonads to hire Deion.
To hire Deion, I think that's fair. Jerry has historically hired coaches that just kind of sit. You know, they're background personalities. They're not alpha personalities. I think Rex Ryan had a lot of smart things to say right there. I think the Cowboys are downtrodden right now and finding a coach who is invested. I think Deion sees himself as a Cowboy more than anything mm-hmm. else. And that's what it took here. I don't know what Dan Campbell, I don't know what how personal Dan Campbell felt about Detroit, about that job. I just don't know. I'm not questioning it. I literally don't know. I know Dan Campbell's an intense human being who's a maniac. D'Amico Ryans felt and feels very personal about this job.
He
wanted this job. He talked about it with Tony Dungy in that sit down that he did with him on Sunday. It's like he didn't like seeing the things that were being said about the organization as he was watching from afar. He didn't like seeing the organization being ridiculed and seeing the organization fail. And this was the team he was drafted to. This is a city that he's tied to, that he loves. And I think Deion, if I had to guess, feels very similarly about Dallas and the Dallas Cowboys.
And I haven't checked the text line, but I'm guessing at least 19 people have said, hey, Deion said he never wanted to coach in the NFL. He's a very good negotiator. I get it. And he cited that, he didn't want guys that weren't as motivated or what have you. I don't believe that for a heartbeat. I think Deion might have felt it at the moment, but I think in the right scenario, he would very much consider, like most coaches would, especially if there's tens of millions of dollars.
$15 million involved? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the reality of Deion's situation right now, and this is probably a lot of what's fueling this talk, if he were, what did he finish, 4-8 last year at Colorado? They're 7-2 now. Like, let's say he was... 3-6 instead of 7-2. I don't think they'd be talking about it because there's no proof that he's an actual good coach beyond Jackson State.
Right.
But the fact that he's got Colorado turned around, I think in fairly impressive fashion too. Like that's a good football team, and I've been as skeptical about Deion as anybody. And I watch all their games because they're always on TV. They play Utah this weekend. I'll watch that one again. They're a very good football team. They're a team that controls their own destiny for the college football playoff right mm-hmm. now. If they win out, they'll be one of the top four seeds in the college football playoff.
No, and I think too that kind of goes in line with as rapidly as everything is shifting in college football. Deion, I think established that. Look, part of it at Jackson State was he had an incredible pull as a recruiter. They had guys that had no business going to Jackson State.
Travis Hunter was one of them. He went there and then went with him to Colorado. Yeah,
and then you lose some of that advantage obviously when you get to Colorado, and they had all kinds of shuffling in the. It looked like the transfer portal was going to destroy them for year two.
Mm-hmm.
He has navigated all that brilliantly.
Yep,
and also. Coaches his guys up. So, and I think he's hired good assistant coaches as well. I think a lot of the challenges of coaching in Dallas that are unique to Dallas, I think Deion's adaptability and his kind of ability to harness the fervor sometimes instead of letting it be a distraction would make him a good fit.
Yeah. When we were talking about this earlier in the show, this Deion to Dallas potential, We got a couple texts from people. 5 Hour Energy fan line, 5 Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. We got a few texts to the 5 Hour Energy fan line, Seth, of, hey, this is him motivating college kids. his shtick is not going to work with adults in the NFL.
Well, no, and that's fair. Very, very fair. I think, for one, look, there is the transfer portal now, too. It's not like it used to be in college coaching where, guys are some. If guys get offended or don't like it, they can up and R-U-N-N-O-F-T. Mm-hmm. So he's dealt with that dynamic a little bit. But I think also he's been an NFL player. He's been a college player. He's been a college coach. He understands that the tone's probably going to change a little bit. And that's part of the challenge is, you got to talk to – that's one thing that Nick Saban didn't understand by reports from guys that played for him in Miami.
Right.
It was like, oh, you know, what the hell's up with this guy?
Yep.
And I think Deion's more of a he's more of a people person than Saban is. I think he'd figure it out.
He's a Hall of Fame player too. You know, like I think there's that. He was a good player, so I think there's going to be a respect level with guys. He's going to infuse energy if he were if they were to hire him. I'm with you. I don't think it happens. I think it'd be fun as hell if it did happen.
I think that one thing that D'Amico has talked about, and I've heard a lot of good coaches talk about, is just the importance of just being honest with players. And I think with D'Amico or anybody else, a lot of that comes with just being really honest with what your criticisms of the player are. There are a lot of coaches that just flat out, for whatever reason, and I don't know, it's because they don't want to get in on the business side, it's hard to actually get an accurate, like, hey, give me a list of my strengths and weaknesses. For whatever reason in the NFL, it was like almost sometimes like you couldn't get that from coaches. Where I think with Deion, I think he's not going to beat around the bush with either his criticisms or his coaching or just recommendations or anything. But I know like he's a way more. I think his interpersonal skills are just way better than I think people want to give him credit for.
Yeah.
Because there's the public personality, Deion, and there's press conference, Deion, and everything, versus I think he's got a way with people, and I think he can make that change.
Yeah.
Now, we've turned this into me stumping for Deion.
No. He's doing a great job this year. Like, he will probably, if he keeps this up, he will be a finalist here in Houston for the Bear Bryant Award in January. Like, he's doing that good a job. And I think the only turnoff with Deion, and I guess the only question I would have, is does he expect the Dallas media, and really the national media, because it's the Cowboys, to kowtow to him the same way he expected and expects the Denver media to?
I don't think he will, but he'll still I don't think he expects to get, I don't think he expects to be treated the way he claims. I think he knows what he's doing in his press conferences. No. I think that he'll have contentious press conferences, which would be fun. I think he'll bristle at some of the tougher questions, but fair questions, and that'd make a lot of fun.
But he's literally cut guys off in Denver. Like, you can't ask questions anymore.
And
he has the SID enforcing these rules.
In the NFL it's different. Can't they've got the media reps and everything. There's a certain the NFL coaches can't treat the local media pool the same way college coaches do. So it would be dramatic and interesting, but I don't think it's like a deal breaker for Deion.
No, I'm just curious how that like, that's the only, to me, like, that's the, like, again, someone who's been super critical of Deion at this point, my only critique is that he's tried to control the media in Denver.
I guess my question to that is, it's annoying and it's funny, or it's fun to laugh at sometimes, but does it harm him as a coach? You know, I don't know. I don't think I don't see where that necessarily does harm to his team or does harm with his relationship with the alumni. I think it does. I think in college especially, it's great for creating an us versus them kind of
mentality.
True.
Yeah.
Putting a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Clint Sterner. I was listening to The Drive yesterday as I was driving around, and I thought Clint Sterner nailed the most confounding thing about the Texans, knowing that D'Amico Ryans is the head coach of this team. We'll let you hear what Clint had to say about the most confounding thing about this football team for me, and we'll do that coming up next.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, several people pointing out on the 5-Hour Energy fan line as we welcome you back in on Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610, that the last thing Jerry's doing, Jerry Jones, is banning a media outlet from Jerry World.
Oh, yeah, there's no way. Right.
Hey,
yeah.
We're talking about, for those who missed it, we're talking about Deion Sanders and the possibility of him becoming the next head coach of the Cowboys. It's not a rumor or anything like that. It's just, you know, just a fun hypothetical. But I had said that, to me, the only real flaw with Deion so far in Colorado is how he was handling the media during the down times, during the bad times for him.
Yeah.
I thought it was unprofessional. And you know, how would it be if he's failing as the Cowboys coach, that sort of thing? But good point. Like Jerry, the last thing Jerry's going to turn the Cowboys into is an unfriendly media outlet.
Right. No, and Deion will still have like blow ups in the media and everything, but it'll be entertaining as it always has been. But also, again, I think you need a head coach if you're actually going to thrive in that environment. No coach is going to come in and quell the hoopla because the owner is directing all that hoopla, all those things that create so many distractions. So the only thing you can do is bring in somebody who can thrive in that environment, you know? You've just got to, like, who's your best hope at thriving in that environment where, yeah, maybe there are a lot of distractions? Deion, because Deion doesn't shy away from it either. He's created many of his own, he's good at creating hoopla.
He is very good at that, no question. So I'm listening to The Drive yesterday, and I know on Tuesdays, Clint's had a chance to go back and look at the All 22. So he went back and watched it. He was actually very almost complimentary of Bobby Slowick. Like he was very clear, like this was not for everybody wanting to take Bobby Slowick out to the woodshed here. Like Bobby Slowick in Clint's view did not have a bad game on Sunday. You know, there's things he could have done better, but this is not a blame Bobby Slowick thing. The thing that Clint was talking about though that jumped out to me was something that you and I were talking about. We've talked about certainly this week, which is how confounding it is that D'Amico Ryans, whose defense epitomizes everything he was as a player, is as a coach, and the swarm mentality is the head coach of a football team whose offense really doesn't capture any of that ethos right now, particularly the guys who are supposed to in the trenches right there.
Right. Yeah, the offensive line especially. It does not feel swarm-like.
Right.
It's the least swarm position group.
Quarterback swarms, the wide receivers swarm,
mm-hmm.
the running backs They swarm, Joe Mixon especially, very swarmy.
The tight ends swarm. They just don't swarm with precision. Oh. They're kind of like a haphazard, like bees that don't make it to the proper destination.
Tight ends are about to catch some of Clint's hands with the offensive line here in this clip we're about to play. But I thought, I stayed in my car for this, to listen to this, because I thought Clint was going in perfectly on just what is dragging this team down offensively right now.
Like the level of softness. Schultz, it's just all the time. It is all the time. The level of quit. It's just the level of quit, man. If it's not just a perfect scenario, it's just I'm gonna pat you on the back as I go by because I know I can't block you from the side. Tytus Howard, this is 2 weeks in a row, man. He ought to be embarrassed. Andre Ware talked about the quit and stuff, and that's true on that play where he tried to strip the ball from CJ. But the level of softness, I mean, he's blocking, like runs away from him. He's blocking guys, and there is so little strain. Like his back is arched. Like he's just riding along. He's just along for the ride. And this guy is going wherever he wants to, and he's just along for the ride. And it's snap after snap. The level of softness that is involved with Tytus Howard is unbelievable. It's blatant. It's not like he knows what he's doing. It's not. I don't want to be physical. He is allowed to do that, and it is absolutely awful. Juice Scruggs and Laremy Tunsil, they got a double team. Backer is outside Laremy Tunsil, so they're doubling a D tackle up to the backer that's outside Laremy Tunsil. And they stand up, and Laramie's got the D tackle, and so Juice is going to the second level. And instead of you either go to the second level right now because you know that Laramie's got him. Or you let that sumbuck know that you're there and you give him a good push and help Laremy Tunsil get control of him and push him even wider so that the run can hit behind you. He literally rests his hands on his left hand on old boy's shoulder and pauses and then doesn't get to the linebacker at the next level. The level of just being willing to allow defenders to dominate you and push you around is unbelievable.
Yeah. That's good, Clint. That's good. That's good.
I stayed in my truck for that.
It is and like we said yesterday, it looked like when it came to the Texans offensive line versus the Lions defensive line, it looked like the Lions were professional football players and the Texans were college kids.
Yeah.
And yeah, oh, okay, those college kids playing tackle are pretty good compared to the other guys, but when it came to the physical side of the game, they just were overwhelmed. They just can't do it. And some of the success of the run game, you know, somebody yesterday was saying, you know, Seth, you're being, no, the run game was fine until last week. Like, no, they were, Joe Mixon was getting 100 plus yards and they had improved in the run game, but we still didn't feel like they were capable of really running when they had to run the ball. You know, when you're in the red zone or when you gotta have it to close out a game, it hasn't felt that way. And I think that matchup between the Texans offensive line and the Lions defensive line, just the way it's constructed, the Lions have a lot of big old, their defensive ends look like defensive tackles. They just physically whooped the Texans offensive line.
Yeah, they did. As long as we're talking about Tytus, that was good stuff too, Clint, if you're listening, by the way, really good stuff. You can hear Clint Sterner and Ron Hughley at 2 o'clock today on this station. The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. D'Amico Ryans was asked about the Tytus Howard play that Clint was referring to. Everybody's seen it by now, where Tytus kind of gives up on his block on a third down. CJ gets sacked. Well, in the process of getting sacked, Tytus looks like he tries to take the ball out of CJ's hands to go make a play, I suppose.
Yeah.
Right?
It looked like he was pulling at it and the ball popped out. Jumped on it and heroically recovered the
ball.
Yeah,
if you have Tytus in your fantasy league and you get points for fumble recoveries of fumbles that you've caused, you scored on that play. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday. What happened on that play, Coach?
With that play, it was to start the play, we had an issue with the cadence. We all weren't on the same page with the cadence. Guy got off the ball quick. We were late off the ball, and they were able to get the sack on CJ. And I'm not sure what happened. You know, from my
perspective, it looked like Titus was just trying to make sure he held CJ, and it's just something that, you know, he wasn't trying to take the ball. I would say, if you're speculating there, he wasn't trying to take the football. He's just trying to protect CJ.
He definitely was trying to take the ball.
So the way Aaron Wilson reported it, he cited a source from Channel 2. Aaron Wilson had said, I can't find the article, but that Titus was trying to hold CJ up, and in the confusion, the story was that's where the ball popped out.
Yeah.
So that Titus was actually just trying to hold him up, keep him from going to the ground too
right,
hard.
Right, right, right.
And instead,
cool story.
Unfortunately,
bro. Who was the source? Titus. Yeah, cool story. He was definitely trying to take the ball out of CJ's hands. What are we talking about? He's reaching in. He's reaching in to get the ball.
I didn't want to believe it. I couldn't process it. And it seemed like the more I watched it, the more I couldn't help but come to the conclusion that it looked like he was trying to take that football. And then you include CJ afterwards walking over. It seemed by his body language, it was kind of like what the hell just happened?
Why are you stripping the ball from me? And here's the thing. And some of you may be saying, I don't see any of you saying this on the 5-Hour Energy fan line, but in your cars listening on the Odyssey app, some of you may be saying, y'all are making a big deal out of this one play. Well, one, the reason we've replayed it so much is because Andre Ware's reaction on the play-by-play was hysterical. Yeah. Ben, do we have the play-by-play? Can we play that one? This was, it's an iconic call by Andre at the end of this thing.
Stroud gets the snap. CJ with pressure. CJ scrambling out to the left, now back to the right, runs into Titus Howard. Ball comes out. Somebody's got to fall on it. Texans have it inside their 35-yard line. A disaster on third down.
Titus has got to stop watching and quitting on plays, watching the action when he gets himself beaten. That's what happens when you just stop and start watching and somebody's still playing. You're trying to get out of the way. You run right back into him.
It looked like Titus almost pulled the ball out trying to pull
CJ happened,
with
Mark,
him.
It happens way too much.
Okay, we've been focused. God, I got to process here because this play is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and it's 3 days now. But I think the reason why we're focused in on, one, that call was great, but two, the silliness of Titus trying to do something with the ball, if he hadn't fallen on the ball, it would have been the sack was already disastrous because it was third down.
Yeah, yeah.
If he hadn't fallen on that ball, Titus Howard, if a lion had fallen on that ball, I mean, this is like butt fumble, Dan Orlovsky walking out the back of the end zone, all-time gaffe. Like it's
happened on Monday Night Football too.
Yeah, it's that bad. Like if it were an actual turnover, this is a catastrophe, and we're really getting upset about, you know, being gaslit over the Titus not trying to get the ball out of there. Like this is just silliness about this whole thing. So if you're thinking of making a big deal out of one play, I'm looking at it like, man, if this play, if Titus didn't fall on his own fumble that he caused, this is a real disaster. And it's so indicative of this offensive line at late too. Like this is not some outlier play where you have this road grader of a 5-man offensive line that's been carving out running lanes and protecting CJ Stroud. The line stinks. And it's stuff like this. It's dumb stuff like this.
Yeah, just because they got away with it and got lucky that the fumble. It was like if the Menendez brothers had missed. It's still a sign of a problem.
It's an issue.
You know, you guys, these kids need some therapy or
something. I love that the Menendez brothers are back in our lives.
Well, of course, you know, like they don't dispute that they shot and killed their parents.
They don't.
It's more complicated than
that. Right. But the Texans.
This was just like with the offensive line. It's always more complicated. Like, okay, every day I come in, I'm like, well, is the offensive line, in fact, as bad as the Menendez brothers? And I'm usually like, well, okay, I can make a... Well, I don't know the whole story about why it's like this. It might be because of their, you know, their assistant coach hasn't given them the upbringing that they need. So, like, you can't blame them for being murderous psychopaths. But I wish they were the Menendez brothers. At least those guys enjoyed violence and were good at it. This offensive line is the least Menendez brothers offensive line I've ever seen, and I'm done with them.
That's a good description, Seth. They're the least Menendez brothers offensive line.
Why can't you be more Dahmer-like?
Oh my!
Come on! Be a Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy. You go full Ted Bundy on him. Yes. Why? Why are you guys so damn soft in non-Menendez brothers like?
The other thing I was going to point out about that Titus play that gets lost in the shuffle is it's not Titus stopping and just stopping blocking. Andre pointed that out very well. It's not the strip sack. Vandy pointed that out, and we've seen that. It's the part of the play where Titus gives up and is just standing there, and CJ turns around trying to make a play and runs smack into Titus.
Yeah,
like just
yeah,
Titus is standing there like a door that's dead bolted shut.
Well, like, there was that play down in one of the games earlier in the season where the Texans were down on the goal line, and Laramie's guy left the picture, so he was left without anybody to block. So he just stood, just completely erect.
Erect!
In posture.
Yes.
At the 1 yard line. And then he looked to his left and he said, "Hey, that's CJ getting tackled. I'm gonna jump in on that action now."
Some hot action over there. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just standing here erect. Oh, look at that pile over there. Off I go.
Jump in on some of that hot CJ getting piled on action over there. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's get to some potentially good stuff here with the Texans. We got a Nico Collins update. We'll get to that. And we'll hear from Jalen Petrie as well. He met with the media yesterday. Any frustration right now on the defense doing its job, Jalen Petrie? We'll hear from him on that. That's coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We hear from Jerry Jones at the top of the hour. He weighed in on the Micah Parsons, Mike McCarthy, whatever we're calling it. I don't know. I don't even know if it's a kerfuffle, but it's some drama going on up in Dallas. And are the Texans lucky this game's being played at night up in Dallas? We'll kind of let Jerry Jones weigh in on that, too. That'll be at the top of the hour. Nico Collins. Is he coming back this week? We don't know yet, but the update yesterday from D'Amico Ryans, I would call this encouraging.
Okay.
No setback with Nico. That was just a game time decision. Yeah, I anticipate him practicing. Anytime you get a starting receiver back, and Nico, a guy who's been, before he was out, he was the top receiver in the league. So I think anytime you get him back, he's going to help everybody.
So, the second part, I have no disagreement with him over that. Yeah.
How good Nico is?
That's good football 101 right
yes,
there.
Yes, he's good.
Good
he's,
players help
he's
football
good at
teams
football.
Be better football teams.
Yep.
As far as no setback, I think that whether it was a genuine game time decision or not, it just feels like the thing that makes the most sense is that because it's a hamstring, because they were being very conservative and careful with it, that they wanted to get him out there and do kind of a slow-paced football practice on a Friday, and that they have with a lot of other players in the past. Then the next week, they do the full week of practice and feel good going into the game. I think I take that at face value. When he says game time decision, that makes it seem like, oh, wow, they were really considered playing him. Why didn't they? I don't know. I think he was using game time decision kind of casually.
Yeah, I do too. I think he was using it as sort of a football label. You know, I don't think they were sitting there 10 minutes before the inactives were coming out and stretching his leg out and going, nope, not today, Nico.
If it was the playoffs, then I think that this is the classic scenario where if it was at the end of the season in a crucial game, if it was the playoffs, we're still at the point in the season where I think most coaches are consciously trying to avoid being too clever with the scheduling and difficulty of opponent and all that stuff.
Yeah. That said, I think the most encouraging part of that cut right there, Seth, is he will practice this week.
Yeah.
He'll have
a
full week of practice. And all indications are the reports, I know Aaron Wilson's reported a few times on this, we've seen other reports, is that he's been moving around really well for a while now. Like this wasn't something where, he finally felt good Friday of last week. The workouts have reportedly been encouraging for a little while now.
And he was running, going, last week during the week of practice that he'd been running full speed and all the GPS numbers looked good and all of that. So I think there's no part of me that thinks, oh man, I can't believe D'Amico didn't play Nico against the Lions and look at how close they were. Then you're naturally thinking, okay, with Nico, yes. I don't think it's a stretch or you're just being, the very, very good chance they win that football game. It's a hamstring. It's a hamstring. You've seen it too many times. I don't want a chronic hamstring issue. And I don't want to see what we saw from Mike Evans on Monday Night Football a couple weeks ago.
You know,
he was trying to play his way through a hamstring.
Yeah, that's right. And now he's out.
Yeah.
And it looked bad with Mike Evans. Nico's hamstring injury, you didn't even notice he really had one until they told you he, you know, something happened with his hamstring. Like, we didn't notice in the stadium, you know, like he's
right.
Yeah, it was on a touchdown, you know?
Yeah, even just last week I was going back and looking at that game and I wanted to watch that play again. And I kind of had to remind myself that wait a second, this is when he got injured. And I had to rewind it a couple times and watch him jogging into the end zone to really pin out that he was definitely hurt there.
And even then, like, you're watching it, like, the people who are like, well, you can see right there. I'm like, can you? I'm like, he's still moving okay at the end there.
Yeah,
you know, like, I can't. I mean, I guess you can see there's a change in his gait at the end there. But, man, like, it was... So the last time we've seen Nico Collins was a 67-yard touchdown catch against Buffalo.
Well, and that's the thing. You got to remember that this is the timeline of it this year was he had a hamstring issue had popped up with him on Friday the week before that game, before the Bills game, and he played through it. And then the next week he ends up injuring it, injuring it more severely. And so you're already in that pattern a little bit already. So you got to nip it in the bud and be as conservative as possible so he can finish out the season.
Yep, for sure. It'll be nice having Nico back. I'm assuming he's going to be back for the game this week. Of course, I assumed he was going to be back when he practiced on Friday last week. So we'll see. Jalen Petrie met with the media yesterday. This was an ongoing question from the media to Texans defenders yesterday. We heard Azeez Al-Shaair talk about this a little bit earlier. Here's Jalen Petrie. Any frustration for the defense right now in that you guys are doing your job and did your job against the Lions and then the offense is having its struggles?
Not at all. It's the greatest, you know, this is the greatest team sport in the world that's ever been created. And, you know, that's why it is a team sport, because sometimes one side has to do more, one side has to, like, it depends on what's going on in the game. And I think that if you look at the tape, there's a lot of things that the defense, a lot of plays that we want back. So we can't pinpoint and put all the blame on, you know, the offense. I think that's the easiest route that we can take, but there's definitely a lot of plays that Jalen Petrie should have made and the defense should have made going back and looking at the tape on Sunday.
Yeah, Sean, I was thinking about this because when we talked about it first, I was trying to put my finger on why this just doesn't feel to me like a team in which the defense would start resenting the offense or calling them out.
Yep.
And part of it is just because of when you hear Azeez Al-Shaair talk, he knows all of the right philosophies, the leader, the importance of not pointing fingers, all that stuff. They've got a lot of leaders like that that are kind of wired that way. But then also, like, to actually justify having feelings of like, all right, come on, man, what the hell are we doing? I think in the NFL, you've got to be a defense that's routinely, you're losing games 13-10. You're losing games, you know, 14-7 regularly because the offense is just doing nothing at all, and you are completely shutting teams out.
Yeah.
Where the fact of the matter is that this defense has been really good, but it has also faltered in the red zone a lot. They've let up some huge chunk plays earlier in the season that were a huge issue. So there haven't been a bunch of games where you feel like, oh, well, you know, like, what am I going to, after the Minnesota game, am I going to say, oh, well, I can't believe they let the defense down that way.
Yeah. Yeah, you lose 34-7. I will say this. I'm looking at the schedule, and I do think that especially if you look at the wins, that the defense has been more impactful than the offense in the wins.
In the wins.
Like the Indianapolis game, I'll give the offense that win. They took it to the Colts with the run game, with the pass game. Defense didn't need to come back on the field at the end of the game because the Texans closed it out. And so the Colts, but, you know, the Bears game, that was a defensive game. They sacked Caleb Williams 7 times. You know, the Texans didn't score in the second half of there. They scored a field goal in the second half of that game on offense. The Jacksonville game, it was the offense that put that drive together at the end of the game, but the defense had to get the ball back for them. You know, they had to have Jacksonville go 3 and out and punt 4 or 5 times in a row. They kept giving the ball back to the offense, and the offense finally put a drive together. And then the Buffalo game, again, other than the Kaimi Fairbairn field goal, you know, virtually no points in the second. I think they scored 2 field goals in the second half of that game.
Yeah, and it was in there, you know, they went 23-20.
23-20, yeah. Yep. Patriots game. I have no problem with any side of the ball in that one. That was a blowout. And then the Colts game, I think, was very similar to that Buffalo game. Same exact score, the Buffalo game, mm-hmm. where the Texans just didn't do anything in the second half of that game, but the defense did its job. So you're right. This isn't an extreme version of a situation where the defense could have, you know, despised the offense. Like, yeah. This isn't a team like the 2015 Texans where you're shuffling Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer back there. And mm-hmm. you're going 9-7 because the defense, and then the defense is really, really good that year. JJ's yeah. defensive player of the year. I think the defense knows, one, this offense is accountable, especially at the top with CJ Stroud. And two, yeah. I think there's still a feeling. I think there's a feeling with the fans that are still texting in on the 5-Hour Energy fan line that there's faith that they can get this thing turned around to some degree offensively.
Yeah, I think that starts with CJ. I don't think there's anybody that's doubting CJ right now.
Yeah.
And I think that almost to start pointing fingers at the offense, aside from it being the wrong thing to do, it almost feels like you're making it harder, or you're pointing the finger directly at CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the way any one of those guys feels, and certainly, you know, wouldn't want to make it look that way.
That's right. Jerry Jones commenting, he's kind of putting his flag in the ground on what Micah Parsons said involving Mike McCarthy. We'll hear from Jerry Jones. And are the Texans very, very lucky that this game is being played at night with no sun outside? Jerry Jones weighs in. That is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.